guys are awesome. Congratulations on making it to the finals. And I've got something exciting to share with all of you. This is the greatest celebration in the greatest city of the world. And in honor of that, the mayor of New York City, Michael Bloomberg, has made a very special proclamation, which I have right here. I'm going to read from the proclamation. Today in Bryant Park, and New Yorkers and Pokemon fans from all around the world are gathered to celebrate the 10th anniversary of Pokemon. Today, we celebrate on an incredible decade of success for Pokemon and look forward to the accomplishments and the innovations still to come. Now, therefore, I, Michael R. Bloomberg, Mayor of the City of New York, in recognition of this important anniversary, do hereby proclaim Tuesday, August 8th, 2006, in the city of New York City as Pokemon Day.
Thank you. Wow. I would like to accept this honor on behalf of the entire Pokemon family. Wow. What a wonderful surprise and on such a special day, too. Thank you, Mayor Bloomberg, and thank you, City of New York.
Hey, I'll second that.
Welcome
to
the
Hyper
Voice
episode
64.
This is a show all about Pokemon's video game championship series. I am your host, Steven Morioka, and I am joined in person today with Alex Underhill.
Hello.
And Kelvin Chan.
Hello.
All right, everyone, welcome to our show. Today we're doing something special in somewhat of a downtime week, but we have... We're actually going back to something we started back in season one. We did, we're doing a history segment. It was, we dubbed these Roar of Time episodes. And we did one of these back in like, for the 2009 season. We're going to do, something a little different here. And we're going all the way back to the beginning. So what we're trying to do here is establish a timeline of competitive Pokemon for the video game championship series, as well as some events prior to that. So, we're jumping all the way back today to the events from 2006, what competitive Pokemon would have been like back then, for the journey across America. So, Alex, Kelvin, I hope both of you are excited to talk about these topics today. And I kind of just want to bring up a few things about, you know, where we are in time at this point. So this would be approximately the winter, start of the year in 2006, in terms of, like, real world...
No, Steven, It's 2019 right now. We're not in 2006.
Yeah, you're right. So modern times right now is 2019. But just going back to the events of, or kind of world events of 2006, the most recent Summer Olympics would have been in Athens in 2004. YouTube was only a year old, established in February of 2005. And President George W. Bush was in the middle of his second term at this point in the United States. So that's how far back we are in time. The current games we are on are, Fire Red, Leaf Green, Emerald, Ruby, and Sapphire. And Diamond and Pearl was on its way, would eventually be released in the summer of 2006, not in North America until 2007.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we are in terms of, like, Pokemon and stuff like that. So yeah, I guess we should point out that both Calvin and I did play in the Journey Across America tournaments. We were around that season. Calvin, I don't know if this was like your first official stuff for the competitive scene.
It was. The Chicago Regional was my first time playing in any kind of competitive Pokemon.
Awesome. Cool. So I had already kind of like gotten started a year prior due to the Pokemon Ultimate Frontier Battlebrain thing in Seattle. That was a singles thing in 2005, and then we also had Pokemon Rocks America in the fall of 2005. Those are different things. We're not going to cover those today, but in my never-ending search for tournaments at the time, it eventually led me to Journey Across America. So why don't we go ahead and talk about, you know, just in general, what this tournament is, Journey Across America. You know, what is this tournament in general? What is it supposed to do? And we're going to shorten this to, we're going to refer to this as JAA, because that's just the easy way to refer to it, instead of having to say Journey Across America every time. But let's just talk about, you know, establishing what this tournament is, you know, why would people want to play in it, and just, you know, the general rules and kind of the differences from competitive Pokemon back then. Because there are a lot of things different than
there are
right now.
I think the entire thing was different. The only thing was that it was basically Pokemon, and I guess doubles.
Yeah, very true.
It's always been doubles.
Yeah, so very first, I guess, doubles tournament, you know, sanctioned in any official way from, I think, I want to say this was Nintendo of America. I don't think this was the Pokemon company at the time. But anyway, why don't we just get started running through, you know, what Journey Across America is. So just in general, in 2006, this would be Pokemon celebrating its 10th anniversary. So they're going to kick it off, and it's funny, we're now in the 23rd, I want to say, approaching 24 years, right? Yeah, that's right. So we're approaching 24 years coming this next February in 2020. But this was a tournament held in the United States to celebrate Pokemon's 10th anniversary. They're having tournaments in malls all across the country, and there would be players, you know, going to play in these things. There would be 26 in total held across the United States. And then for the bracket for nationals, they would end up with 32 people with six players later on qualifying through a second online qualifier challenger test, that kind of thing. And just to really quickly talk about all the regional locations, you know.
Wait. Were they called regionals? Because this is the question I'm dying to know.
Calvin, do you remember if they were like technically called regionals or they're just like tournament locations? What do you remember?
They were all over the U.S.
Yeah.
In a bunch of different cities. There were how many? 26 of them, it says here?
Yeah, there were 26 of them in total. And two of them were actually held in the same city. So there were two of them because they also held tournaments in the Houston Space Center, as well as in New York.
That's wild.
Also in New York in the Rockefeller Center, right?
Okay.
Of all these regionals.
Haven't they been hosting like PCs there recently?
Have they? Any Texas players know about these
things? No. Rockefeller Center in New York.
Oh, I don't know.
I think they are. I'm pretty sure that I've been hearing about the events that Patrick Donegan's been hosting. I think he's been hosting them there.
Ooh, in the Rockefeller Center. That's pretty cool,
though. I think
so.
I don't know.
Anyway, they held, you know, 26 individual tournaments, mostly on Saturdays and Sundays. Some of them were held on Wednesdays, which is kind of funny. So you needed to take off school or work to participate in those because the tournaments ran from February through June, even July, I think. Yes, all the way through July. I actually have a little booklet here from some of the collectibles from the archives of just the schedule and the city locations and all that.
And I'm going to make Steven post pictures of pretty much everything on our Twitter, the Hypervoice Twitter, because there are just a lot of cool old things that you guys need to see from the back in these days, all the different handouts and stuff, different prizes that they earned. Yeah, so if Steven doesn't post these, please bug him, because I am making him do it. And I also, this is a lot, like, all this stuff is not stuff that I have, so it's not like I can be responsible for this. So yeah, you have to bug Steven.
That's very true, yeah. So, just in general, the 26 tournaments, regionals, whatever you want to call them, were held generally in malls across the country. So the very first one was held in Miami in the middle of February. And Calvin, I'm sure you were aware of this too, but just based on their travel pass, because they had to bring a lot of equipment with them, they pretty much went in a path that from like the southeast of the United States to the south, to the southwest, to the northwest, to like the Midwest area, and then all the way to the East Coast, where they would eventually end up in New York City for nationals.
So wait, does that sound like going around the U.S. in a clockwise pattern?
Yeah.
Starting at about, like, whatever, if the U.S. was a clock, it would be, what, 5 o'clock?
Yeah, probably like
4 or 5 o'clock?
5 o'clock, 4 o'clock, 4:30 if you want to go that far.
Going all the way around the clock. All right.
Yeah, but just in general, like, I'll just name out some of the major cities that they hit. So there's Miami, then they eventually, like, move their way westward to Dallas, and eventually to the California cities in Los Angeles and San Francisco. They go all the way up to Seattle. They hit the mountain areas, Salt Lake City and Denver. Then they hit a lot of the Midwest, so Minneapolis, Chicago, then Detroit, Kansas City, all that stuff. So they're going that clockwise pattern.
Mm-hmm.
But
and then finally, like you said, New York.
Yeah, ending up in New York for the national championships later that August. August 8th, 2006, actually, I remember that date. But I kind of just want to talk about, and Kelvin, we have Kelvin on the show for a special reason. So, Kelvin, just tell everybody what your, you know, general big accomplishments were from this season here.
I participated in the Chicago Regional, where I got second, and then moving on to the National Championship and got second there.
So, now, I'm sure we were going to get to it at some point, but I really want to know, like, The start of your career was when you walked into that Chicago regional, right? We're going to refer to it as regionals, but yeah, that?
That's correct.
Okay. Now, what was it like when you walked in? Like, first off, not just like what it was like, the event, the, you know, the venue and stuff, but what's the first thing you did? Like, the first, like, bit of competition? You play round one. It's not Swiss. It's single elimination. Like, what? How does this work? What is the tournament structure, really?
Yeah, it was single eliminations, and we all had our Game Boy Advances hooked up to, I guess it would have been the GameCube at the time.
Yeah, yeah, GameCube. And running Coliseum?
Yes.
Running Coliseum. Okay, okay. Did you guys have to bring your, like, this is a bit weird, but you guys didn't have to bring your, the Game Boy Advance to GameCube cables, right? You weren't responsible for that, were you?
No.
Just your own systems.
Yeah, the system and the
cards. And the game. Okay, okay.
Yeah, those, I know those, like, Game Boy Advance cable adapters to connect, like, your Advances to a GameCube.
Yeah.
Those are, like, really difficult to find now.
I know. So this I is, like, know. Those I still
are, like,
own mine.
Those are, like, collector's items, which is really cool. But, yeah, I don't remember having to bring that. And I know we needed our own game and our own system to bring.
They had very fringe uses. I remember using it for, like, Animal Crossing GameCube and maybe something else. But
I know one for sure is Legend of Zelda Four Swords Adventures.
Oh, yes,
or Four Swords, whatever it was called.
Did you need a game for that or no? Or did you just need to hook up the systems?
You just needed the disc, so the GameCube game, and then just four systems, and that's
it. It's a really rare game. I want to play it. You know me and Steven, Zelda fans. Anyway, so there was no form of hack check or team sheet, right? You just kind of walked in with your system and game, right?
Yeah, just walked in.
Yeah, they did not check anything like that, I'm sure.
They didn't check anything, but you know, if you brought a team that was obviously illegal, then they probably would have said something.
Okay, okay. When you say obviously illegal, you know, we don't want to like get too much into hack talk, but like, what, for example, did you see anybody get disqualified? Like,
not that I'm aware for that reason. But there were banned Pokemon, like, you know, the mythicals.
Oh,
so like the Mew and Celebi. So like, if you had those, then you wouldn't be able to participate.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Okay.
I think everyone was very clear about those rules, and you know, this transitions us nicely to what the actual rules were for these tournaments. So they're a lot different than all of our BGC formats we've been playing. Probably the closest relation that we have to today is that, you know, it's a double battle, and we are using the restricted Pokemon, which aren't really restricted in a sense for this tournament, because there wasn't a limit on the number of, you know, restricted as we know today, like Mewtwo, Rayquaza, Groudon, Kyogre, that kind of thing. Ho-Oh, Lugia, all that.
What do you mean there was no limit?
You can bring, if you wanted to bring six of them on your team, so let's say a good example of a team like that would be Mewtwo, Lugia, Ho-Oh, Kyogre, Groudon, Rayquaza. That could be your team for these tournaments.
Wait, really?
Yes.
So okay.
The I think just the way all the other players' teams and, you know, things played out is that people found that having all six like that wasn't very powerful.
Synergistic, I guess.
Or didn't have a lot of synergy, as people would say.
And I think another reason also because trading wasn't very easy back then as well. Trading between cards. So having like both legendaries from both games into one card, it's not always going to be very easy.
Okay, yeah. Especially with like a good one with respectable stats and, you know, everything that you want, because yeah, like the breeding process was pretty much non-existent at this point. It exists, you could breed, but there was no way to guarantee good stat at Pokemon.
Yeah. At this point, I'd known about you know, what natures did and what EVs did. I had no knowledge of IVs, individual values, and what those did. And I'm sure other people did have knowledge of that, but you could tell based on all of just like the HP values in some of the old videos you can see is that, you know, none of these are perfect. Everyone's stats are all over the place, mainly because we're also at level 100, so there's a little bit more of a spread there in terms of those numbers.
Mm-hmm.
But kind of just talking about we're going to talk about rules really quick, but I actually have a 2-page rules document from the tournament, from a printout I have still from that year.
So this is not something you reprinted. This is something you have from back in the day?
Yeah, this is something I've had for like 13 years now.
Yeah, yeah.
And just to highlight what we were just talking about.
I can see it's really dusty. Wow.
I don't think it's that dusty.
It's not.
But anyway, one of the bullet points reads here at the end is that players may not use any Pokemon created or altered by quote-unquote game-altering devices, such as Action Replay or Game Shark.
Oh, so, okay. Okay.
That kind of thing.
Calling out specific ones. That's kind of very... I know. Like, that's really interesting.
Straight in the rules document.
I don't think the current rules docs mentions anything specific, any current softwares and what have you.
Right.
But speaking of the current rules doc, so Steven presented this two-page rules doc to me when he got here, and I was like, wait a minute, that's it? What is the current page number on our current rules? And I looked it up. Sure enough, it's 29 pages in total, and that includes like such things like the cover sheet, the index, and the table of contents, and what have you. But still, that there's a lot of content here just looking through, and they cover so many different situations when there's like a lot of factors to control. But back in the day, all you had was two pages that could just be printed out and handed to you when you came to the tournament.
Yeah, so kind of just to go over the rules really quick, and we can talk about some of these in detail if we need to cover these a little bit. But there was no level restriction, so you could pretty much go up to 100, and if you weren't doing that, you were pretty much doomed. So your Pokemon need to be a level 100, because there's no restriction, so that's what you're playing at.
Well, I mean, does Endeavor exist?
Endeavor does exist.
Does Focus Sash exist?
You know what? I want to say people did use level 1 Pokemon, right? With Endeavor? Mm. Focus Sash did not exist at the time, and yeah, so there's a lot of different clauses. There's a species clause. You only have one of each Pokemon of the Pokedex number on your team. Same with item clause. You can only have one individual held item per team. So you cannot have leftovers on more than one Pokemon, right?
Yeah.
Another thing I saw in the rules here is I believe also sleep clause was in effect. So just flipping through the papers here, I want to...
Don't mention that to any Smogon people.
Well, I guess it was a big thing, and maybe like the competitive Pokemon, whoever was controlling this tournament, you know, saw that. So it actually does say here, players may, under the attack moves category, players may not cause two or more Pokemon on the same team to be affected by sleep or freeze. So,
or freeze? That's not even in your control.
So I think, honestly, I think that was just programmed into the game already.
No. What?
In like the XD, I want to say. Kellen, what do you remember?
Well, I mean, freeze would make sense that it's programmed in, so that the freeze chance would just be zero after you've frozen the first one.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
But
yeah,
sleep is an active move. I don't know how they can stop that.
I remember even like in some of the handheld games, it might have even been in like Gen 4 as well, you could set the rules whether you want like certain rule in there to prevent multiple sleep or multiple freeze. I may be wrong about that. But
we'll look into it. Or if there's any experts listening, we would really appreciate your input, because I'm sure there are people who have like farmed the games. They have farmed what do you call it?
Data mining.
Data mining. Like yeah, like looking into the files and stuff to see how that works. But I'm very curious how they went about handling this. What if, like, would you have to raise your hand and call a judge and be like, he put two of my Pokemon to sleep. Get this man out of here.
I never heard of any, like, crazy situation like that during player from any of the other regional locations, so.
Important to mention, this is Gen 3, and Dark Void has played a large role in VGC in a number of its years, and it doesn't exist yet. It comes into play in Gen 4.
That's right.
And I know it played a large part in the early years with Smeargle. A lot of more recent players will be familiar with its role in 2016, but it did exist back in the day, but not this far back. We're actually so far back, Dark Void doesn't exist yet.
Very true. No Darkrai, right? It's a Generation 4 Pokemon.
So if you're putting anything to sleep, you're not even doing it reliably with something like... Well, no, Spore does exist. I think
yes,
Spore does exist.
Yes, you do have Spore.
But only on...
Parasect and Breloom.
Parasect does have it? Okay, I forgot Parasect. Oh, does Parasect have Rage Powder? Does Rage Powder exist?
No. That's like a Gen 5 move, right?
Rage Powder? No, it's gotta
yeah,
be.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a Gen 5 move, because it came in with Amoongus and Volcarona, right? And then you know, some of the older bug Pokemon gained it in their move sets, but Rage Powder is definitely a Generation 5 move, so that doesn't exist either.
All right,
it's definitely less common, just you know, availability and also accuracy. Hypnosis is probably the only other option back then.
Yeah, that, sleep powder, Spore, but the only reliable thing you saw was Spore from Smeargle, who would learn it from Sketch.
Yes.
But
let's get through the rest of these rules, though.
Yeah.
So starting from the top there, we're just go through them all, Steven, and let's just get them played out there, because I think we've like said like five different times now. Let's get into the rules. So I'm sure you guys are hating us right now. Steven, just go through all the rules and let's not go on any tangents.
Okay, so we already talked about there's no level restriction. We already talked about the species and item clause in effect. The banned Pokemon, which we mentioned earlier about the mythicals, and the only mythicals at this time is that there are Mew, Celebi, Jirachi, and Deoxys, which are banned from play. So you can't use these, just like every other
only
season.
Obtainable from events
yeah,
kind of thing.
Every other like VGC season we've had so far. Battle time for the games was 8 minutes. So that was like your whole battle timer. And then, and this is all in the game.
Is this like 2015 time, or is this like your time? This is like 2015.
Yeah, like, this is like 2016 and prior time.
Yeah, so 2016 where you had 8 minutes for the whole game, and that's ticking whether the animations are going or you are picking your move.
Correct. Kelvin, actually, do you know if the main clock was still running during animations?
Honestly, I can't remember.
That would be your time then.
We could, I mean, we could even just check on videos here. But anyway, the turn time would be 30 seconds. And another, the turn timer would be 30 seconds, kind of like how we have 45 seconds to make our moves here. We had 30 seconds back then. And one of the other important things is that the tournaments were only open to U.S. residents. And this will play a very key part much later on in our story. And yeah, we actually just looked up some of the videos from Journey Across America, and we did see that the full battle timer was running during animation. So it's like a regular clock we used to have back in 2016 and prior years.
Mm-hmm.
So just looking at these, you know, kind of comparing it to modern day timers, you know, what do you think of the 8 minutes in total and then a 30-second turn timer?
I mean, seriously, I feel like these games could just easily be decided by time. Easily, easily. 8 minutes? I mean, 30 seconds turn timer, yes, but like it's a little bit shorter than the 45 we're used to, but I don't know. I feel like you could just take games to time so easily. Well, like, Calvin, were the games so offensive that they ended that quickly? Like, did nobody abuse time?
Not that I can recall. I think same as with the current format, because of having your, you know, the strongest Pokemon in the game, your Kyogres and Groudons and Mewtwo's, that there's so much damage output that it's very difficult to last the full 8 minutes.
Not to mention the key move of the game, self-destruct. You guys want to talk about that?
Yeah, that's a very important move for this metagame. One of the other things is that, you know, specifically to get self-destruct on a Snorlax or a Mewtwo, it's really a one-time use because you only can get it through a move tutor in Pokemon XD Gale of Darkness. And you can only teach that once, just like a TM in your regular game. So if you wanted to get another Pokemon with it, you need to replay your Gale of Darkness to get it. And you don't get that move till the very end of the game after you've beaten it. So it can be really rough grind to do
that. And Explosion doesn't exist yet, right?
We have Explosion. Just both Mewtwo and Snorlax cannot learn that.
And they were two of the best in the business at doing this, at Go and Boom.
Correct. Explosion, I don't believe, was a TM at the time yet, so it would only be used by Pokemon who could learn it naturally.
Like Electrode.
Yeah, like Electrode. Metagross wasn't exploding because it couldn't learn it yet. Yeah, because the TM wasn't out. Because Explosion, I think, was TM64, and back in Gen 3, we only had the 50 TMs plus whatever HMs were available. So that's where that came in.
Oh man, it's episode 64 as well.
Oh, that's awesome. How convenient. This is the Explosion episode.
For real. The explosion of not VGC, but I guess JA and future VGC onto the Pokemon scene.
Yeah, so everyone knows why a lot of Pokemon fans know why Self-Destruct and Explosion were really good moves back then, because prior to Generation 5, they would have the defense of all the Pokemon they are being used on. So it was much more effective back then. Since Generation 5, it's still been used, but just not as powerful as it used to be. We'll talk about some more of the Generation 3 battle mechanics in a little bit. I just kind of want to run through some of the other stuff here. So really quickly, we're going to talk about how players enter these tournaments, right? So Calvin, I'm just kind of wondering too, like, how did you discover Journey Across America? Like, how did you find out about it to, you know, register for it and try to take the test to qualify?
Wow. it's been a long time.
Because I'm trying to think of my answer to the same question. I don't really know either. Like, I don't remember how I found out.
There must have been some kind of signage, maybe at the mall that it was held at prior, and then I just saw it.
Could it have been like Nintendo Power or like through some Pokemon magazine or something?
But to reiterate, what did you guys do once you did discover this? You had to take a quiz?
Yeah, really good point. So we did have to take a quiz. There was essentially entry for these tournaments was by two ways. So first, you could have online entry, right? So this you'd be registering yourself. You'd tell them where your home is, so your home location. And you would take these online tests, right? So these tests, you need to like get these, they'd be quizzes on the internet, and you need to like, I don't remember what the quizzes were about, maybe like type matchups or what effective move would be used on this, but you need to score like at least 80% and do it in, you know, the fastest time or whatever. And there would be 128 entrants per tournament, so 128 slots, and you could still make the qualify for the regional. For the regional you're going to go to, you know, be as an entrant and still not going, and they would have lotteries later on for the events for any open slots that were still remaining. Because I know pretty much every single regional would have that. So you had most of the entrants come in, and then any open slots would go to anyone else who didn't have a slot already for in the lottery. And the lottery comes up more in future years, but that would be a way to do it. And there would also be two divisions for based on your age. We know them today as like a junior senior division, and we have masters now as well. But back then, they didn't have those official titles. They were just called the 12 and under group and the 13 and over group based on your age.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, at the time, Wesley, my brother, would have been in the junior division. He was actually 12 at that year. So we're going to talk about, you know, him a little bit too at the Chicago regional, because he ended up winning the junior division for the 12 and under group for that tournament. But yeah, for these tests as well, like because of the location you enter, I remember they would pretty much assign you, these are the four you can go to based on your location.
Is that why you need to put in your address?
I think so, yes. So,
okay.
Calvin, I don't know if you remember this, but like the four closest to us would have been like Minneapolis, Detroit. We had Chicago, of course, because that's where we're from here. And Kansas City, I want to say.
And did you guys go to multiple of them or no? Did you only get to choose one to go to? Or what was it? Tournament? Like,
gosh, Calvin, I don't really remember.
You guys, come on, guys. Get it together. Let's get those memories going.
Like, well, I personally went to just Chicago because, well, just geographically closest. And
yeah, yeah.
I don't think I was as serious about competitive Pokemon at the time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I figured, okay, Chicago, let's try it out. If it works, great. If it doesn't, it doesn't.
Yeah, and it did work.
Man, I guess it did.
Yeah, yeah. Calvin made a very deep run in the tournament. And, you know, as for me, like, I guess because Wesley won the 12 and under group, like, we didn't have to worry about or going to other ones. I don't even know if you were allowed to do that. I don't think it was like today where you can just go to as many as you wanted. Because they had that limit of four geographically. And I don't know if you can only enter one. I honestly can't remember. Anyway, one of the things is, you know, why would you want to bother playing? Is there anything worth it for this? So from each of these tests to playing that regional, you could compete to win a trip to nationals in New York City, New York. And this would be a, you know, paid trip and accommodations and all that. And, you know, various other prizes. So you got like trophies, medals, I want to say like a Game Boy Micro, which both my brother and I still have.
You guys have your micros?
Yeah, there's somewhere.
Those things are so cute.
They're somewhere back at home. Yes, the Pokemon design editions on the back or something.
Oh, you have Pokemon micros?
Yeah.
Special ones.
Yeah.
Those things are awesome. It's kind of like the Switch Mini is like a little bit like what we're seeing now. Not the Switch Mini. What is it? The Switch Lite.
Yeah, the Switch Lite with the Sword and Shield. Zacian and Zamazenta.
Yeah, there's one coming out. Like
designs
that.
Coming out in November or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, we have like the smaller, cutesy version. I don't know hardware differences between those, the micro versus what was standard at the time. I guess the SP or the Advance, but still, just kind of interesting, something fun. And like, I just honestly, I've heard about these several different events, but those I think are always my favorite prizes. And I still wish we did something like that, is custom systems as a reward. For a while, used to get systems. Like, I remember, like, it was a really backward system. We've always, like, joked about how bad prizing is. Like, not that we're ungrateful for the things, because we can often turn a profit on them and turn around and sell them.
Yeah.
But VGC prizes, like, they've had some really cool highs and some really weird lows. You know, often we get, like, or we would get like a 3DS, when you play in the tournament with a 3DS. So it's like, what? Why are you giving me this? I had to have one to enter and play and win. But I got another. I got another one, and then even still to this day, we still get TCG cards, which is, you know, a whole nother issue. Love that.
Yeah,
but
very funny. Anyway, the kind of just along the lines of prizes, though. I know, in, like, when I won my regional, I got a Nintendo 3DS for winning that. You know, like the Generation 1 Nintendo 3DS.
Yes.
That version for winning the regional in Phoenix in 2013. At the time, like, 3DSs were already out, but I was still only on a Nintendo DSi.
Oh, I gotcha.
I remember
okay.
my brother in 2010 when he won Nationals got a Wii, Nintendo Wii, for winning that.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I think second place would get, like, a Nintendo DS or something. And in...
there was a year where you won.
Yeah, there were in 2000 for the World Championships. I want to say like 2008, 9, and 10. If you top cut those brackets, so 2009 and 10 especially, if you top cut those tournaments, you would get, or maybe even just top 8 in 2009, you would get, because I know Hui Ha has some of these, you get a custom World Championships Nintendo DS.
Yes, and I
and
think
those
that's,
are so cool.
I think that's probably the best prize that they've ever offered. Like, the trophies are amazing. The Pikachu holding the trophy, I love those. But in terms of something that you can, like, get mileage out of while also being this amazing trophy prize, they need to go back to that. Like, I want to see them do this for the Switches. You know, you get, like, a really cool custom Switch.
Yeah.
Or, like, at the very least, Joy-Cons. Could you imagine Joy-Cons? Like, custom World Champion Joy-Cons that you can put on your Switch. It's as simple as a skin. Like, come on, just give us something. So, it'd be really cool.
So, Pokemon Company, if you're listening, we'd love to have, like, custom Switches.
I am
or
sure they are listening. They listen to every episode. They text me after each one and tell me how great of a job we're doing.
And the last thing from all the tournaments is that from those regionals, in order to get to Nationals, you need to win. Only the champion of that regional would advance into the national championship. So you need to win first. Otherwise, again, a single elimination bracket, one game, and you lose and you're out. And that's it. And you're done. So only the winners would advance to Nationals. So...
Okay, I think that was a good transition to, you know, to maybe another question. If only the first place advanced to Nationals, how did I end up going there?
Wait, that, what? I didn't know this. Okay, wait a minute.
What a great question.
This is like a real plot twist. How did you?
So, Calvin, you already mentioned earlier in the show that you took second place at the regional and second place at Nationals. But we just mentioned that... only the champion moves on. So we'll talk. We'll get into this, but you know, just you can
no,
just
wait,
talk
no,
about
no,
this
no.
now.
Tell me now.
How did it happen? Why?
Well, Steven, you know, please help me remember some of this too. But the first place in Chicago was not a U.S. resident.
What?
That's correct. Yeah.
Now, did they play in Nationals or no?
They're not. So your opponent, Mike Papagiannis, is from Canada, and
a Canadian. Oh
there
my
were
gosh.
There are actually quite a few of them, you know, infiltrating some of the regionals because they just wanted to come play. I guess none of them really thought about what would happen if they won, but Mike did
and
end up
did.
Doing that. And then Calvin, this would be more from your end, but from the web on the website when they had the Journey Across America website still running, they would post pictures of the winner and the picture of them and I believe the information about their team. Not like just their six Pokemon, right?
Okay.
They post the
almost like a trainer card.
Yeah, they'd post the picture of the player's name, as well as their six Pokemon. So eventually, Mike's stuff was up there for a bit, but eventually I saw it replaced with you. And when I saw this, like, I knew it right away what happened. So tell us from your end, like, so at the tournament, you know, you get second and you know, like, okay, my run here is probably done. No, I'm not going to be going to Nationals. But when do you find out that, like, oh, hey, I'm actually going to be given first place for the tournament and I get to go to Nationals?
I recall receiving a letter in the mail.
Mm-hmm. Not even an email, like a physical letter.
Yeah, a physical letter. saying that I was essentially the alternate that gets to move on to the Nationals because the first place champion.
Yeah, champion.
Was disqualified.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's funny we bring Mike up is because, like, it wasn't like, it's just kind of weird that it was only open to U.S. residents, and this does continue on later in 2008 and 9. The VGC doesn't open up to Canada until 2010, which is kind of odd, but I had known Mike from the year prior, from 2005 in Seattle, because he was the runner-up in that tournament, so I met him there, and you know, just based on how all that stuff worked out, I knew he was from Canada, and when I saw him at Chicago, I asked him about this.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, because I knew the rules, I was like, hey, this is only open to U.S. residents. What are you doing here? So, you know,
did he sneak his way in? Did he like falsify an address or something?
I'm assuming, yeah, he falsified an address. He snuck his way into the tournament. And, you know, I even, you know, asked him about this. I was curious, you know, that he got down here. And, you know, he just mentioned like, oh yeah, I moved to St. Louis and this is what I do there now and everything. So, you know, I was only 16 at the time. So, you know, I believed him. It was like, okay, well, I don't believe any ill will here. And there wasn't ill will, like trying to break the rules. Like they just wanted to play.
Yeah.
But it's kind of ridiculous that they weren't able to. Mike just wanted to play. There's another player. I don't remember the first name, but he went by Aeolus. There's also a third player within their group who was, mm-hmm. I believe, was also from Canada, I think. But, you know, they both came down from Canada to play. Mike ended up winning. And then, Calvin, we find out you're the alternate who gets to move on.
Well, this tournament was also called Journey Across America. So I think maybe that also played a part into it.
Yeah.
It wasn't Journey Across North America.
Now, to be fair, they should have gotten rid of it then when they transitioned to 2008 with the VG Showdown, the video game Showdown.
Yes, yeah.
And this rule did pertain. But yeah, Journey Across America, I can understand, yeah, you have to be an American citizen. I guess that sounds a little more real when it's in the title.
Yeah, this is pretty funny, though. We'll talk about Mike some more. You know, Mike's a really good player. He's, I'm pretty sure he's just retired from VGC now because he has a child, he has his own family and a job he works at, so he's a very good player when he was playing back through like 2010 through 12, primarily. I want to say he was still around in 2013, and then the years following, you know, he's just, you know, slowly moved away from competitive Pokemon.
Okay.
But very good player, incredible player. I really admired him in terms of his skill level way back then. Let's talk about some of the... So, competitive Pokemon is a lot different nowadays in terms of like the mechanics we deal with, and things are a lot different back in Generation 3.
Now, this first one that we have here is disgusting. I hate this. I can't believe this was the game. Now, I'm going to go ahead and mention it, but yeah, so when your Pokemon gets knocked out, you're immediately sending in your next replacement Pokemon in the middle of the turn.
Correct.
So... ignoring like entry hazards and strange things like that, turn one of a game, you could actually knock out all four of your opponent's Pokemon without, you know, without it like any, it could just be turn one, but there's no like switches. You can win on turn one, essentially.
Yeah.
Knock out four Pokemon, including the ones in back.
Yeah,
for example, if you had, I don't know, two flying Pokemon, like, let's just, for example, say Lugia, two Lugias, which we're already breaking species clause, and then I don't even know if Lugia learns Earthquake, but let's say, for the sake of example, Steven's team is four Pikachus, and I click Earthquake with my first Lugia and knock out both the Pikachus. Now Steven has to send in his back two Pikachus. My other Lugia uses Earthquake, and it takes out his next two Pikachus. Steven has lost all four Pokemon in the first turn of the game.
Yeah, turn one, it's over.
And the game is just over. And that is essentially how the mechanic works. This is a very silly scenario that I just came up with now, but it's a mid-turn switch. So if there are more moves to be had, they will continue to happen. There was no such thing as a Pokemon targeting into an empty slot.
Nope, definitely not.
Like, oftentimes we see now if Groudon uses Precipice Blades and clears the field, and then your, I don't know, Mewtwo uses Ice Beam, it'll say, but it failed because there are no targets. Now, this would not happen because you'd have to keep switching in Pokemon until you didn't have anything to switch in.
Pretty much, yeah. So, Calvin, I don't know how, like, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't know how, like, well you utilize these mechanics, but, you know, both of us are still relatively, everyone's new to the scene because this is, like, the first kind of big thing we have with that.
Well, I mean, I would think it's relatively difficult to actually execute on that strategy consistently because you basically need super effective moves on the opponent's entire team and, you know, prioritize it as such so that you can use a super effective spread move, essentially, that can hit, you know, and knock out the first two. And
no,
then the second...
no, no. Like, what I was talking about was a ridiculous scenario where you could end the turn in one game. But did you guys ever have moments where you abused the fact that you double into a slot knowing that that Pokemon will be knocked out? They will have to bring in their back Pokemon, which will take the subsequent hit from your other Pokemon. For example, I know Mewtwo was very popular. If your Mewtwo Ice Beamed a Rayquaza, and you knew that the Pokemon they had in back was a Kyogre, could you then electric move that Rayquaza slot, knowing the only Pokemon they could bring in is a Kyogre, and then subsequently hit Kyogre with a Thunderbolt or Thunder or whatever? Did you guys ever have moments like that where you purposefully took advantage of this mechanic?
I want to say maybe. Like, maybe. It was probably a subconscious thing. Like, I don't know if I was advanced enough to consciously, you know, think that far ahead at that time.
Yeah, I would agree with Steven. I don't think I thought that far ahead either. I mean, maybe one turn ahead the most, but definitely, if it comes up, it'd be very rare.
Now, just a general comment. We see that a lot of players, like, despite the player base seeming, like, stagnant or almost shrinking at this point in VGC, the concentrated strength of players has grown significantly.
Oh, yes.
To that, even players that are entering for their first tournament, there are so many resources, so much more knowledge out there that they can come ready to play, ready to win. And back then, there was a lot less resources.
Absolutely.
So just in general, the player base was overall worse. And there was a lot less of overall mechanics knowledge and stuff like that. So, you know, it would be very different if we had a Gen 3 tournament today where we used these games and built teams using these rule sets, but with the minds of current VGC. I think it'd be very interesting.
Yeah, imagine like if 2019 were Pokemon's 10th anniversary and we're kind of doing the same thing. You know, the internet's in a much stronger place than it was back then. Like I mentioned at the top of the show, YouTube was only around for a year. So think of all the people who provide content through that medium. That's a way, that's essentially like something we didn't really have back then. And mm-hmm. Calvin, I remember like, even after some of the regionals that happened prior to ours in Chicago, there would be like some battle videos posted from some of the other regionals, and it'd be just cool to just go watch them to see what other people were using. And that was kind of like the best thing you could do.
Right.
Like,
and study. Yeah, and it was nearly impossible to kind of figure out teams of other people's. And also, you know, resources like damage calculation.
I was going to say, what were your resources? What websites did you guys go to?
Cervy! Cervy's the best. Cervy was definitely around then.
Yeah?
Yeah, that would be it, pretty much. You just pretty much know what the Pokemon were and the movesets, but very difficult to, you know, optimize spreads or movesets based on, like, what's the most common or anything like that.
So. Most common was hardly existent, you know? Like, it was just... There were so few tournaments, there was no online ladder or metagame that if you saw a Pokemon, your experience was what you remember from playing against it in-game or reading about it on Cerebee. There was no experience of seeing it on the battlefield unless you were going to multiple tournaments, which, even across your season, Calvin, it was a two-tournament season, right?
That's right.
Yeah, so
yeah.
Unless you had the prior knowledge, like you had your prior knowledge at New York from your experience in Chicago, but... In Chicago, you had no prior knowledge to go on.
That's right.
Yeah. So, really crazy. And that's just in generally just talking about what the player base was like. But back, bringing it back to mechanics, this is the another one that just really does it for me. And it makes it very hard to go back and play old games, is the famous physical special split. There were a lot of moves, a lot of Pokemon that were just completely ruined by this. Like a big one I think a lot of people know about was like Flareon with its really high... I mean, Flareon didn't get a physical fire move forever in general. Like,
right.
They introduced Flare Blitz, but didn't give Flareon Flare Blitz forever.
Yeah.
So Flareon's an example. Another good one is like Gyarados. Gyarados with its
yes.
water typing. The move Waterfall did exist, but if Gyarados were to use it, it would be special. However, there were things like Hidden Power. Hidden Power was still a thing, so like Hidden Power Flying was physical.
Correct.
And Gyarados would sometimes use Hidden Power Flying to have a stab, a physical stab move, because Hidden Power, despite what we know it being a special move, it was still based on this physical special type split, so Hidden Power could
right.
be physical or special.
So everyone knows in Generation 4 is when they actually introduced that kind of split, so moves are either specifically labeled as physical attack, a special attack, or a status in the status category. Back Generation 3 and prior, you know, like Alex just mentioned, everything was just based on the type. So I think your specials would have been grass, fire, water, electric, psychic, dragon, dark, and ice. Yeah, so that's 8. And the other 9 types, whatever those are, would be, the rest would be physical, right? So a really good example of this would be like Dragon Claw. We know today is a physical move because that's what it's been categorized as, right? But because it was a dragon type move, it would be special. Same goes for, on the opposite side, Shadow Ball. We know this as a special move, but because it was a ghost type, it's a physical move.
Shadow Ball, is, from what I understand, was a popular move because of this.
Yeah, Shadow Ball Snorlax was the play back then.
Yeah,
for sure.
And was that for Mewtwo and pretty much, I guess Snorlax can't hit ghosts, but because, yeah. I mean, it wants to use its normal type stab moves, but it can cover itself very well with another physical move in Shadow Ball.
Yeah, and I think that was important back then because of how, I guess, important Self-Destruct Explosion were. Ghost types were relatively common to be paired with Snorlax, and you want something that can hit the ghost type on your opponent's side.
Yeah, and so why don't we get to talking about spread moves and Explosion or Self-Destruct. Self-Destruct, what it did was, this was Generation 4 and prior. Self-Destruct would have the defense, which basically means that it's doing double damage. It would have the defense of the opposing Pokemon, which means it's hitting way harder than what we see today. The other thing to note is in Gen 3, I don't know if this was the case in Gen 4. I did, just in Gen 3, spread moves were calculated very differently. So, for example, Explosion and Earthquake, they were not reduced in any way like we see today. An Earthquake today does 75% damage to the 3 Pokemon on the field it's hitting. This also goes for moves like Water Spout. Water Spout is doing 75% damage to the 2 Pokemon that it is targeting on your opponent's side.
Correct.
Now, back in the Gen 3, and Steven actually didn't even know about this. I'm calling him out.
No, I did not. I mean, they're you know, where would I have learned this back then,
yeah,
right?
So. Yeah. So, Earthquake was not reduced at all. It was like you were hitting with a single target Earthquake on all 3 Pokemon. Your own and both of your single individual opponent's ones.
Yeah, so effectively you're doing 100% damage to all 3.
But for any moves that did not hit your partner Pokemon, but both opposing Pokemon, and I believe that would be like Surf. I think Surf was a big one. But another important one is Water Spout. They were reduced by 50%, not 75% mm-hmm. like we see today. 50%. So they were doing significantly less damage. But Explosion, the big, big spread move that it was not hampered in any way. Not even hampered by what we see today with the 75% chance, or 75% reduction, or 25% reduction, technically. But, oh my gosh, yeah. Like, it was so, so absurdly powerful. And we were actually talking off mic when, just before we started recording. And I was asking, you know, why wasn't Water Spout used at all? We had to do a bunch of fact-checking. Water Spout did exist in Gen 3. Kyogre did learn it at, like, level 75 or something. And the Pokemon were played at 100, so Water Spout was a total legal move. I think this was why. Water Spout was doing half damage.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, because to go along with that, you know, there are a lot of different, you know, very valuable items and moves that didn't exist yet as well, so the choice specs did not exist. Same with Choice Scarf, the Life Orb, Focus Sash, and Trick Room as a move didn't exist. So you think about now, like a Choice Scarf Kyogre from 2010 or 2016 or like 2019 Sun Moon series. Kyogre doesn't really have a way to boost its own speed in that manner. And because of just how weak Water Spout's going to be, you're always going to be like in that same speed tier you're in. And both Rayquaza, Mewtwo, and there's some other Pokemon that are still faster than it all the time. Ludicolo and Rain, for example. They're just going to be always going to be doing damage to you, so your Water Spout's going to be weakened even more than it already is because of the way spread damage, that kind of attack worked.
Which is the reason why Hydro Pump was actually used on Kyogre back then.
Yeah, nobody sees Hydro Pump usage on Kyogre anymore. Yeah. I mean, to be fair, it's just kind of like Origin Pulse, but just worse.
Yeah, because we don't have Origin Pulse yet. Scald doesn't exist yet. Water Spout is essentially a bad move then. So Hydro Pump is, I guess, your best option. I guess you had Waterfall which would have been a special water move. Yeah, Surf has that spread move, but you're not going to use Surf when it's cut in half.
Cut in half. So you're pretty much just using Hydro Pump, and oh gosh, Kyogre is just looking a little bit like a risky mon to use. I'm looking at Calvin right here.
Well, it is, but at the time...
Oh, I just got it.
Well, I think we'll get into that, but I did have two Pokemon on my team that had Hydro Pumps in Kyogre and Ludicolo at the time.
Mm-hmm. And so, there was a lot of things different. Spread moves being very different. Also, those important staples, as Steven had mentioned, the Choice Band did exist.
It did, yes.
Snorlax being the ever-common exploding Pokemon that it was, there was actually a video Steven had showed me of an old battle where the game was decided by Quick Claw on Snorlax. The Quick Claw seemed to be like a decently common item. And also, ever hilarious, Quick Claw does not announce itself whatsoever. So... if you had it on something that was questionable, which I don't think anybody really did, but if it was, you wouldn't know if that Pokemon was just naturally faster than you.
Back in Gen 3.
But if it was a Ludicolo in Rain versus a Snorlax, which in the situation that I was watching, it was, the Ludicolo had the game locked, but suddenly Snorlax just moved first with no announcement whatsoever.
And then won the
game.
At the end there. We'll reference this again once we get to Nationals, because this is kind of a funny point to reference of Calvin's opponents later. But we've covered a lot of the general Generation 3 battle mechanics and a lot of, you know, what Journey Across America is. But eventually, and just kind of funny to note is that for all those tournaments, is that while they were mostly held on... wait, I already talked about Saturday and Sunday thing. Never mind. So
wow. Wow, Steven.
Somewhere held on Wednesdays, but anyway, eventually the tournament and the tour moves over, makes its way across America, gosh.
Wow.
It reaches Chicago. So our tournament's upcoming. I still remember the date. It was May 27th, 2006. It was a Saturday?
What was the weather like?
It was a nice day. That's pretty sunny. I remember that.
It was a nice day, but we were in a mall.
What did you eat,
We were in
Steven?
A mall. I don't know that.
Come on. You gotta remember all these details.
I at least remember the weather, you know, apart from Kyogre's rain, but... Anyway, we get to the mall, which is somewhere in downtown Chicago, and, you know, I was there with my mom, my brother, and sister, and then, Calvin, we would see you there eventually. You know, Calvin and I play each other in this tournament. We play each other in the top 8 or 16 of the regional, and I know this for sure because... after Calvin beat me, I do remember we have this general play area, and then there's the stage, which where the finals happen. And in the general play area is where all the other matches go on. So after Calvin wins, I know for sure, you know, after I leave the area because I was eliminated, Calvin still played another round in there. So at best, it was top 8. It was probably top 16, but I remember there weren't that many people left. So it's one of those two rounds.
Now, really quick, Steven, what was the team that you brought to this tournament?
Yeah, so I'll talk about that. The venue was also a very tight space. Calvin, do you remember how small it was being in there? Like, it was super cramped everywhere you were walking.
It was super cramped. People stood next to
during
each other.
During their games.
During the game, because the games are hooked up to the GameCubes.
You're looking at the same screen, right?
Same screen, yep.
Just like you have your individual screens for inputs. Do they have... Now, wait, you guys are playing on your SPs or Advances? Did you guys both play on SPs?
We were both on SPs.
Okay.
I think people could play on the Advance if they wanted.
Yeah, it had the same hookups and everything.
Yeah.
Connection points and stuff.
For sure.
But, so you're both playing on your SPs. Now, was there anything on your screens or were they just input devices?
So, what I remember is that we just had... You kind of have what your bottom screen is on your 3DS nowadays. So you have the option for fight, run, item, which you can't use item anyway. But they'll give you the fight option for each Pokemon or the Switch, right? You have Pokemon to switch to.
So it was on the SP screen.
Yeah, it was all on the SP screens because if both of those are on the TV, you know, your opponent's going to be able to see what you're doing.
Yeah, that's so. Like in Pokemon Stadium. Exactly. If you've ever played that, you can actually just see the moves that your opponent's Pokemon has. It's always hilarious.
Yeah, unless like on the Nintendo 64 controller, you remember they're all mapped to the different C button directions?
If you memorize it,
then you can keep them hidden for your opponent.
Yeah,
so I hope the Nintendo Switch doesn't have like anything like that for Sword.
We're looking forward to that because I want to know the answers to those questions. But so you guys had everything, like all your moves and inputs were put on these private screens. It's a little bit interesting because like screen peeking is even more dangerous when you're standing side by side.
Yeah, and you got to be careful with the cable so you don't disconnect it, because if you do, you're probably going to get, you know, disqualified from the tournament.
Yeah, that's scary.
And yeah, I just remember that place was a very tight spacing right outside the venue we were playing in. There's like some fashion store where you can buy clothes right next to it. We were on an upper level as well, as something I remember.
I think it was the same level as a food court, maybe.
I have no idea.
Well, maybe that's a food court there now.
There's probably a food court there now, sure.
No. Stop avoiding my question, Steven. Tell us, spill it. What's your six? What were the six you brought to this first tournament?
Yeah, my six I brought to this tournament were Mewtwo, Rayquaza, Kyogre, Kangaskhan, Gengar, and Heracross. So, did not even realize, like, I used Heracross back then. You know, it's one of my, like, signature Pokemon I'm known for. But,
You're known?
Maybe. That's questionable. But anyway, just something I noticed not long ago, you know, just a few hours ago actually, was that the six Pokemon I have on my team, if you go back to like the 2016 format, they all have the ability to have a form change. So five of them can Mega Evolve, and Kyogre has the Primal form now, which I was like, oh, that's kind of funny. There's also like Kangaskhan, Rayquaza there. You know, a lot of Pokemon I thought were strong and I liked a lot, so that was my team. And I somehow made it up to wherever I played Calvin in.
Yes. And then Calvin was the one to knock you out.
Yeah.
Now, was there anything else you wanted to mention on your run before we just quickly dive into your brothers?
No, I can't. I honestly, there are a few videos like I have posted on like some of my play, but one of the guys didn't even use any of the legendary Pokemon, so they're, you know, what we now know as restricted. No Ubers, as they were called back then. So that was, you know, kind of an easy one.
Were they officially called Ubers?
Officially, no.
No.
Pokemon would always avoid those terms.
Well, I guess that's, they didn't have any term for them because there was no restrictions, so you could just use whatever.
So they said, this was a Pokemon. But in terms of like...
Did they call the other ones mythicals, or were they just the banned Pokemon?
They're just the banned Pokemon.
Okay.
I think they probably would have been known as mythicals or something back then.
I wonder
when
that term started. I mean, I'm sure we could find that, but...
Like, I don't remember much about my team's moves or the strategy behind any of it. I knew some of the Pokemon had Protect, so I was at least
somewhere in the right direction. Steven, the regular expert.
Like with everyone else. Oh my god.
Now...
with what everyone else was doing.
Now, Steven, your brother, we mentioned, actually won the, not junior division, but the 12 and under division.
Yeah. The modern analogy you would make is that would be your typical junior division nowadays.
And he won with a team of?
That was Mewtwo, Kyogre, Aerodactyl, Jolteon, Arcanine, and Tauros. So, again, don't really know the logic behind any of these team members here. Arcanine is just Wesley's favorite Pokemon, so that's there. I don't know if he actually used it during the tournament, but Aerodactyl, Jolteon, and Tauros are all fast Pokemon, so that's good in formats when, or in that kind of metagame when Choice Scarf isn't around and there is no Trick Room, right? So they're all fast, they can do damage really quickly. Jolteon synergizes with Kyogre's Thunder, or with the Rain rather, and the Mewtwo, Aerodactyl, and Jolteon all are very fast. I highly doubt they speed tie because we had no knowledge of IV, so it was. While there is the chance, of course, they probably didn't. Other than that, he didn't really face much competition in that tournament.
Wow.
That's kind of rude to say because...
Wow, so rude to say. I can't believe it.
He did play Matt Swanson. We have a video, video record of that.
I forgot about that.
I remember posting about this in our group on Facebook. But he did play Matt Swanson. So Matt Swanson is a player who would have been at that tournament as well. Same as Grayson Guerin.
Mm-hmm.
Those are also some players we saw at that regional. There are probably some others, but... I'm just not aware of them at this point. And, you know, Calvin and I would have been there as well. My mom would have been there as a spectator.
And anybody else listening to this, if you played in JAA, please do let us know.
Yeah, let us know what your experience was like, where you played. Maybe if you were at the Chicago tournament as well. But, you know, he went with that team. He ended up playing, Calvin, I don't know if you remember watching the finals, you know, from your own memory or if it was just from the video, but he played this really young girl. She was like 6 or 7, mm-hmm. and she had maybe one legendary Pokemon. I don't know.
But she was able to make it to the finals.
Or maybe 0, but she made it to the finals because these were all really young kids, and they also didn't know what they were doing.
Wow, Steven's just
going
to continue to bag on him. He's just the worst.
Yeah, the... You know, Wesley was okay of a player because the two of us got to work together, which almost every junior, every 12 and under winner was 12 years old or 11. I think there's one 10-year-old as well. Okay. All these kids were older because they're, you know, they're more developed as in their minds, right? So mm-hmm. they know what's going on a little bit better.
Understandably, yep.
But he ended up winning. He won that Game Boy Micro from there, won the trip to New York for Nationals, and he would get the +1 for the, he needs an adult because he's only 12 at the time, right? So... that's all good. That happens. All the younger group happens before our tournament. And then, Calvin and I eventually play. And then, you know, I get to see Calvin's team. And we haven't mentioned Calvin's team for this regional, for this tournament.
Well, because we got to talk about now Calvin's run.
Yeah. Calvin, go for it. Tell us about your team.
My team was Mewtwo, Lugia, Kyogre, Ludicolo, Metagross, and Snorlax.
So this seems really meta. Right, it looks like a very well built team. What do you remember?
It also seems kind of gross.
Oh my god! Anyway, this it looks like a really strong team for this kind of a meta game, right? So, what was your team building process for your team? Because like mine was nothing. I had nothing essentially. Like going for mine, there was just a bunch of Pokemon I put together that I liked. You know, what was your kind of team building strategy?
I think I wanted the Kyogre Ludicolo pairing because just Kyogre Ludicolo is good. Snorlax,
because it's one of the best.
Self-destruct, Snorlax was definitely, you know, very strong Pokemon then. And then just Pokemon with a lot of bulk, Lugia and Metagross were fairly bulky Pokemon. And
now,
Mewtwo.
Could Metagross take in a self-destruct or an explosion?
It probably could. But I mean, it'll leave you with minimal health afterwards. But
at least
it can survive. You can survive.
Yeah, not a lot of Pokemon can.
Right.
You know, it's funny that Metagross was also a popular Pokemon. It wasn't a Pokemon just on Calvin's team. It was very popular on a variety of different teams through that metagame. But I think we mentioned already, did not learn Explosion, but Metagross has really withstood the test of time. Been good in multiple formats. Probably the two that it wasn't too great in were 15 and 16, mostly because of the mega mechanics then. But otherwise, every other time when it was legal, it's had pretty decent showings.
Now, I did mention how the teams were simpler back then, and like, you know, the play in general was also simpler, but I think a really cool testament to like the game mechanics and just like some synergy that Calvin put into his team is in one of the replays I saw, Calvin actually had Snorlax and Lugia on the field, and Snorlax went for Earthquake, and this was planned to hit the opposing two Pokemon, however, or maybe like opposing one Pokemon. This was a fateful turn where Calvin's Lugia got frozen, did not get to go for the attack that it was going to, and then it subsequently gets knocked out when it should not have.
Yes.
And because of the way the mechanics work, Calvin has to switch in his new Pokemon for Lugia's,
that's right.
which is KO'd, and he brings in his Kyogre and has to Earthquake himself because that's just how the mechanics of the game work. And what he originally intended was to just Earthquake next to his Lugia safely, but you have to be careful, you know, with this like more modern presence of the game. But like when you're clicking Earthquake, if your flying Pokemon, your partner Pokemon that's immune to Earthquake goes down, you're going to be hitting your partner.
Yeah, that was very unfortunate. And going back, you know, even the turns before that, you know, turn one, I double protected against my opponent's self-destruct, which I thought would have given me a huge lead. But then the freeze happened, and then I earthquake my own Kyogre.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
was not planned, of course.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I was, I you know, through all the years, I've always remembered, you know, Calvin had double protected against that turn one self-destruct, and he had the 4-3 lead. And, you know, I always thought it was like, wow, Mike played really well to beat him in the end. And I just forgot, you know, some of the critical hits. What are the critical hits in this one? But the freeze that happened, and, you know, so just some of the other, you know, luck factors that played into this game. But I'd always forgotten about those. So, and I, you know, I remember it makes sense after rewatching the video, you know, oh yeah, so even though Calvin made a really good move turn one, things just didn't go his way afterwards.
Small, totally irrelevant tangent, and I think I've talked about this on the show in the past, but you guys are playing on XD and or on Coliseum, and
yeah, it was XD, yeah.
It was XD?
Yeah.
Okay.
Gale of Darkness.
Now, something that I always thought like was wicked cool is those back in those days you played in that, and then you played on PBR in later years, Pokemon Battle Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really cool because you get to play with the 3D Pokemon on one of the home consoles. And it was just awesome because it was such a bigger deal than what you normally are used to playing with the 2D sprites on the main games. We have the 3D sprites now, so we don't have any reason for that. And it's like, there's still a lot of excitement, I think, behind those. One of the main things, though, when I was watching these old replays that Steven showed me, these old videos, is that when they're playing on XD, they get to play in different stadiums. And I've been crying out for this for so long, is I want, like, when you're playing through the main game, even in the most recent games, Ultra Sun and Moon, there are different backgrounds you get to experience as you go through the different routes, and, you know, depending on if you're battling indoors or outdoors. And they have these different backgrounds where your Pokemon are fighting. And I want those to be present in VGC. I want them to be either random or chosen, and, like, them to make use of them. I'm tired of battling on this bluish aqua green stadium that we've battled on I think since like 2014, and it's so boring and bland. And these videos, we were watching them, they're playing in the different XD coliseums and backgrounds. Like one of them, I think this is actually what made me think of it, is when Calvin's Lugia got frozen, they were playing on like some like beach coliseum or something, some beach
yeah,
background.
That's right.
And it's just really exciting. Like, I don't know, it's such a small detail, but it just makes the game more aesthetically pleasing and fun.
Honestly, based on all the Sword and Shield trailers we've seen so far, we're probably going to be stuck in that one, you know, battle arena.
You're right. The one where they announced Galar Weezing. I feel like I think they showed a bit of it. We're still going to be battling in Aquamarine Land.
Yeah, so
there's always a next game.
Yeah, yeah. Now
the Diamond and Pearl remix coming out soon.
What were both of your thoughts about battling on Coliseum versus other players? Was that an excitement factor at all?
I think it was really cool getting into those models, because otherwise, how would we have battled each other? We would have been able to connect.
I mean, you could have link
cables. You would have to use a link cable.
Yeah, okay, yeah, so there you go.
Or the wireless ones, which I had back in the days. I don't know about you guys. Did you have those wireless ones?
The ones that came with Fire Red and Leaf
Green.
Yes,
those.
Yes, I did have that.
I had those. Those are
cool.
So
yeah, those would have existed at least, but I thought it was really cool to be able to play with the 3D models. You know, this would have been like my third competitive tournament overall in general, you know, by this time. So it was something I was like, okay, so yeah, we're on the Coliseum or XD now. Coliseum was the year prior we used, and now we're on XD here. So that was cool. Yeah, so anyway, I thought it was really neat. Calvin, what were your thoughts on playing on the XD Gale of Darkness games? What did you think about using the 3D models, rather?
I think it's definitely more fun and more interesting to see the animation. It looks nicer and just more fun.
So did we finish talking about your run, though, Calvin? I think this whole episode has been horrible for tangents. The whole thing has been tangents.
I'm fine with it, though.
There is no continuous stream of thought. It has been a branching path the whole way.
If we want to move on to the national tournament, we can certainly do that.
Yeah, so yeah. We got to talk about how that breaks down. But I think we did just kind of wrap up the finals. Calvin gets haxed out, you know, and then deserved to win that. But
yeah, ending up taking second. We already heard about how the champion, Mike Papadonis, was Canadian, so he wasn't allowed to go to nationals. They put Calvin in as an alternate. And, you know, he ends up as one of the 26 entrants through there. So before nationals happens, there's the second chance, like, online qualifier challenge. So there'd be, you're only getting 26 people going to nationals from these regionals, right? Each champion. Now, that's not a clean bracket, but Pokemon's always having about, you know, clean cutoffs and cuts and all that stuff. So this bracket, they want to make 32 person. So those 26 winners are all sorted out. I want to say randomly, maybe not. There's always this big theory about that they weren't, and Pokemon deliberately formed their bracket to put stronger players against one another that knew each other from, you know, Smogon and stuff. But that's a whole different story. Anyway, six other entrants would come in through these online tests, right? And one of them ended up being my mom. And this is actually how she ended up started playing Pokemon in general. So if you know me, you know my mom also goes to tournaments and stuff. She plays for fun and everything. The reason this all started is because, you know, Calvin, I want to say there was some kind of rule where if you had played in a regional prior to Nationals, you weren't allowed to play in the second test or try in the second test thing. So I tried to take the test for myself, right?
So there was no second chances? They were only opening it up to new people, basically?
Pretty much. I think that's essentially how it worked. Calvin, correct me if I'm wrong here. But actually, you wouldn't know because you would have made Nationals and wouldn't have to worry about this. But anyway, so that's silly to ask you that. But my brother would have got the plus one. So he and my mom would be able to go for free with the accommodations. But if I wanted to go to New York, I would have had to pay. My parents would have had to pay for that, right? So if I didn't get a way to go there for free, I don't think I would have been able to go to Nationals that year. So my plan was to take this second chance test, but I just used my name again in the same computer I was on with the previous test. And I think Pokemon or Nintendo of America was tracking everyone's IPs they were using from the computer. And they wouldn't allow me to enter. It could have been as simple as like, oh, your name has been used before, which made sense, but name and address and everything. But I essentially, you know, panicked at the point. I was like, okay, well, I can't get in, but I need to find a way to get myself to Nationals. So I went downstairs to my parents and I told them what was going on. I was like, okay, I need to enter one of you. So my dad didn't want to do it. So he said, okay. So my mom was willing to do it. So okay, I put her name in, took the test for her, and she got into the bracket as one of these second chance people.
Now, wait, Steven kind of brushed over that little detail there. But Steven is a criminal, and this is actually incriminating and will be used in court. But Steven took the test for his mom.
Yeah, so, you know, this is kind of brings up the topic of ghosting, and this is kind of getting to another change. But let's just talk about this really
this
quick.
This is, like, very light ghosting, though, because ghosting is, like, in-game person versus person, not...
Yeah, so...
This is more like... this is like when you give somebody, like, a fake ID to take a... like an SAT test
for you.
That's what
it
is.
Yes,
you know?
It is.
When so you like, pay somebody to take the what are some other tests that they have?
I think there's the GRE. There's
stuff
the,
like that.
The lawyer exam, the doctor exam,
the bar exam, the lawyer exam. Yes, the lawyer exam.
The bar.
It's like paying somebody to take the bar for you, except
today,
a lot less high stakes because it's a Pokemon quiz.
Today, like ghosting is a similar way where you can like for the online competitions we have, you can play for another person, but and they may end up getting the championship points for it, but maybe it wasn't them playing the whole time or anything like that.
Yep.
Same kind of thing with team online tournaments, where it's other people can be helping you while you're playing. And I know that's kind of a banned thing. People don't want people helping each other during actual play, you know?
It depends on the circumstance. For the most part, people frown on it, but there are some tournaments where it's just like, hey, get your best boys, and you're going to play against my best boys, and we're all going to like... You know, it's like a 5-on-5 battle all through one person. All through, like, you know, one person clicking the buttons or something. But for the most part, yes, ghosting is banned or frowned upon at the very least. However, in Pokemon, there's really nothing that they do about it officially. We only have it viable in one circumstance, and that is those online competitions.
Yeah.
And they don't do any kind of checks for that or any kind of...
They're never going to know. And kind of same deal with the getting my mom into this tournament, same way. Like, nobody was going to know who took the test, so...
And so, this is just my personal spin on it, but, like, I honestly don't frown too much upon, if you want to call it ghosting in, like, the online competitions, just because... It's something that's unregulated. If everybody's doing it, you have the option to do it yourself, but don't feel the need to. It's just whatever you want.
It's also really low stakes, those online competitions. But
yeah.
This, you know, probably...
In person,
it doesn't exist. This probably was a little bit bigger here. Yeah, in person doesn't matter, but this is probably a little bit of a bigger deal because, you know, I got my mom into the tournament. She also... I forget how this works, but...
Now, wait, you took the quiz for her, but did she still have to win the lottery then?
No, she didn't. So there was no lottery for Nationals. There was just...
Then how was she one of the, like, six people that made it in? Did nobody else do this?
So there were... Because they only took the top six or something like that.
Oh, and you had a really good quiz like time.
Best quiz score and time, and that's how she made it as 06. So same with, you know, those six in addition to the 26, Calvin being one of those, would have been the 32-person bracket. And that's the story of how my mom got started in competitive Pokemon. Now, you know, she hasn't done too much in terms of play. She actually, if people don't know this, she actually has Top Cut or Regional before, mm-hmm. In the Madison Regional in 2013. I don't remember her team. I remember like five of them maybe. But anyway, that's how she got started. Now, funny story is that she actually, in her very first round, ended up playing Minba Lee. And we'll talk about him in a little bit. But he is the eventual champion who Calvin plays in the finals. And she played him. She had a shot to beat him. You know, made some, you know, different questionable moves. But, you know, it's her very first tournament. Like, this is the first time, like, really touching Pokemon in general. So that's how she got started. Now, Calvin, this tournament was in New York City, Bryant Park, to be specific. The date, I still remember, August 8th, 2006. I think I talked about that already. But, you know, getting to New York, was this your first time in New York City?
I don't think it was my first time, but...
Because it was mine.
But it was my first time going there for Pokemon, certainly.
Well, and, of course.
Well, first I'm going to the venue itself because I've never been to Bryant Park myself.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because this was pretty much all outdoors. They're lucky they had good weather that day.
Yeah, for real. I can't believe it. Outdoor tournament. Ugh, it just seems like so... I guess there's like concerts and festivals. They just probably planned it similarly.
Like another thing, like, it was my first time in New York City. This would have been 5 years post 9/11. So I know one of the things I did do there as a tourist, as a sightseer, is we went, I remember my mom, my brother and I, we went to visit the Statue of Liberty because that's something we'd never seen before. We also visited the memorial site of Ground Zero, I don't think was a memorial yet. There's still cleanup going on that. But, you know, that was just some of the things we did. Calvin, I know we were all staying in like one big giant hotel. It was near Times Square because we could see it out our window. You know, that was cool. Like, we picked up our prize packs and stuff. You know, I got a lot of those things on the table. I got this, you know, funny fan thing we got that says the Pokemon Video Game Nationals.
Again, Steven's going to post all those pictures.
Yeah, those will be available for everybody. But, Calvin, you know, what other things do you remember about, you know, the hotel or just New York City or that event prior to all the tournament stuff, which we're about to get into? We're going to talk about Hulk, of course. Hulk Hogan, that is. Not the Incredible... Not the Incredible Hulk, but Hulk Hogan.
I mean, to this day, that event, you know, that trip was still one of the most, I guess, important times of my life. It, you know, got me to playing Pokemon. It also, I also met one of my best friends at that tournament as well. So, shout out to Bruce. I guess my life is very different because of that tournament, in a good way.
Yeah, so we see you still coming to tournaments and events here in the Chicago area and regionals as well, which is always a thrill to still see you around playing. Because, you know, for me, you know, you're the one who beat me in the regional. So I was like, okay, this guy's pretty good. And, you know, I know the whole story of how you get to nationals. But then to see you keep going on into the finals, you know, that was a really, really big deal to me. And, you know, I mentioned before that back then when I was a kid, like, you were a role model for me because, like, this guy's really good at Pokemon, and I want to be like him. I want to get to the finals someday. So it's really cool to see you progressing. You know, as a spectator for that event, I was watching a lot of the games because I could, and I was just filming what I could.
You two were actually a similar role for that for me when I started. Just at our locals that Rebecca was hosting in 2014, you guys would frequently top cut the tournaments that we had, like the Premier Challenges, the locals and stuff, or at least do well enough at them and always beat me. And I was just like, wow, like, those guys are just, like, seriously pros, because unlike a lot of the other players in the Chicago scene, I think you two are the most serious, the most poker-faced when playing. A lot of other players are a bit more emotional and talkative, and I was just like, wow, these guys are such serious business. They're just, like, killers at the game. Like, they're just... I was, like, so intimidated. I was like, one day I want to be like those guys. Like, it was just crazy.
I think it's fair to say we're both old-timers, and, you know, we've been through, you know, all the ups and downs. We've been through a lot in Pokemon, so... we just get it at this point. So anyway, you know, the park was neat. the playing in the park was neat. You know, nice weather. There are a lot of different things going on. Pokemon Mystery Dungeon, also a demo at this event. There are other like arts and crafts things you could probably draw just like you can at modern day events. But let's get to the big one here. Hulk Hogan was like our guest MC for this. Let's just talk about him for a bit. Why do you think he was selected? Because I still don't really understand that.
I guess they wanted to really go out because this was the 10th anniversary and Hulk Hogan was a celebrity that everybody knows.
Must have been a Pokemon fan. I think. I don't know. Maybe not. The vibe I got from listening, maybe he wasn't, but like...
I have a theory.
Well, then what's your theory? Just
so,
spill it.
As a wrestler, I want to say like his... You know how every wrestler has their own name? So this is his wrestler name, right? Hulk is his wrestler name. His real name's Terry Hogan. But I think his signature colors were red and yellow on the like outfits he would always wear. Or maybe the bandana. He would always wear red and yellow, and that's Pikachu. Right?
Okay.
That's like sure. My theory. I don't... It's very out
what's,
there, but...
That's a weird poll, Steven.
I don't know. Otherwise, I don't know why they selected him. But it was kind of funny to see this big, massive wrestler dude, you know, everyone's familiar with. And, you know, you, Calvin, you got the opportunity to shake his hand. I think my mom also did. I want to say Wesley did not, but maybe he did as well. But, you know, they all got to be, you and my brother and my mom all get to be up on stage with him for the introduction announcements, and you eventually on stage for finals and semifinals too. But, yeah, what else did you think about Hulk being our MC and just at that event for us?
It definitely made the event more memorable for myself and for pretty much everybody who was there, just having a big time celebrity like that, you know, at the event. His commentary was also very interesting and fun. I mean, I don't think he necessarily knew a lot about Pokemon battling, but he made the commentary very entertaining.
Now, was Body Slam a good move? Did Return exist yet?
Body Slam, I think, was a good move back then. Return, it may or may not have existed, but Body Slam was also used for a secondary effect of the paralysis.
Okay.
I think that was also very important.
That was your speed control back in the day.
I guess so, right? Body Slam from Snorlax. Was Return in it yet? Didn't anyone evolve from Happiness? Maybe like...
Crobat. I know. I remember. That's
old. Oh, yeah,
old
Crobat.
One.
That's right.
Like that's...
So they probably were around. I don't know. We just used Body Slam instead. Maybe Return's base power was different back then. I don't know. Anyway, most people use Body Slam on their Snorlax, but
now the reason I mentioned that is because in I believe the semifinals and the finals, Body Slam was put to use. Oh my gosh! And once it's shown on screen, Hulk gets very excited. If you haven't seen the clip, you need to look it up. But Hulk's like, now wait, did that Pokemon just use a Body Slam? Like, that's a Body Slam, brother. And, like, it was just really hilarious how excited he gets. And, like, the Pokemon uses it again. And to make matters even better, it was coming from a Groudon that was at +4 from 2 Swords Dances.
Yeah.
So it one-shot a Rayquaza. And Hulk, I'm sure, doesn't know that much about Pokemon. So, of course, he sees a Body Slam, just takes something out in one hit. And he's like, that's the best move in the game. Like, why is it? And it's just... The way that it lines up, it almost seems like the tournament was built for Hulk Hogan so that he could see some awesome Body Slams.
Yeah, this great commentary. Actually, if everyone remembers when TPCI was doing like the commentary auditions, like they put out this thing where you could submit a video submission for or video or audio submission of commentary because they were looking for people for the commentary team. And Nugget Bridge did this fun thing where they put Hulk Hogan's voice as one of the as an audition for him. So it was kind of funny.
Okay, yeah.
Anyway, you know, Calvin, you play in we know you make the semifinals and finals on stage, and I know we have footage of the finals video. I don't know if we have any footage of the semifinals anywhere when you played. It's got to be somewhere out there. But do you remember like anything else memorable from previous rounds that tournament?
Well, it's a little bit hazy. Not, I would say no. I'm sorry.
So, your first couple of rounds, you know, you were probably playing on setups outside of the main stage. They were just elsewhere, I guess. What were those like then? The same, like, similar setups to what you played at the mall, or what was that?
It was very similar to the mall, but of course the stakes are, you know, higher now because you want to become national champion.
Yes, yes. And it's still single elimination. It's just a top 32 bracket. So got to win every match from there. Best of one, right?
That's right.
One shot, yep, one
still
chance.
One game.
It's all decided in 8 minutes or less. And yeah, that's really crazy. You made it all the way to semifinals. And then that's when you started playing on stage. And then the finals, finals of the whole tournament. We got to talk about that fateful moment. This replay, the YouTube video for the game is on YouTube. I know that.
Yeah, it's available. We'll link it for everybody.
We'll link it for you guys so you guys can watch it. But just very fun to see the finals, the teams going into it. We had Calvin's team, which Calvin, you did change from Chicago. So why don't you go ahead and tell us your team?
It was Mewtwo, Rayquaza, Kyogre, Ludicolo, Dusclops, and Snorlax.
So you made small changes, it seems, that I think you only changed one. No, two Pokemon. No, just one. Just one,
two,
right?
Two.
Two. Yeah, there's
Rayquaza
two
Rayquaza over Lugia and Dusclops over Metagross.
You chose to use a much more fearful one. I think, I don't know. Was Lugia good?
It was good, but because it got frozen, I abandoned it.
Oh, wait, so it was like a superstition thing almost.
Interesting.
I guess Rayquaza's not going to get frozen, because if it's living in Ice Beam, what happened?
So, I guess it's like that kind of thing for the Rayquaza switch, but I guess, what was the decision based for Dusclops instead of Metagross? What do you remember?
Well, I wanted to partner Snorlax with something where I can just self-destruct without worrying about protecting.
Just protecting.
Oh, that's a good point.
Now, Min's team was a team of Mewtwo, Rayquaza, Groudon. So, almost like they have this, like, mirror rivalry where they both have Mewtwo, they both have Rayquaza. But it's Groudon versus Kyogre, the classic showdown. Again, Mewtwo, Rayquaza, Groudon, Cradilly, Clefable, and Snorlax. And I want to point to Clefable because I think Min actually definitely seemed to be a very smart mind for the game back then. With these, like, what we would refer to nowadays as cheesy double strats. But back in the day, if this was the, like, there were not many strats besides just clicking explosion and protect. Like, you know, an earthquake next to your flying partner. I don't know how many other neat strategies you guys saw. But, yeah, also just in general, the thought of redirection, was almost non-existent. What did you, like, what were some other things that you had, like, on your team or you noticed otherwise, Calvin? Other strategies?
Well, of course, the Swift Swim Ludicolo was the probably one of the main strategies there. Rayogre, I guess that would have been a prototype back in the day.
Wow. Very early prototype.
Yeah, yep. To get rid of Groudon's son, I guess, and allow that Kyogre to hit even harder with its Hydro Pumps. Kyogre was really just a threat to be reckoned with. But Min really showed that Groudon can be quite the crazy threat. With his Groudon, he would often follow me with his Clefable so that he could Swords Dance. And then he also had the move Endure on Groudon.
Yeah.
And this was often paired with Explosion from his own Pokemon, or Self-Destruct. From his own Mewtwo, his own Snorlax, or if he expected the opponent to use those. Because while the Choice Scarf didn't exist, the Pinch Berry, Salac Berry did.
Yeah, so that's when I think you get below 25%, that'll increase your speed by a stage. So Groudon's whole moveset here with the item is with the Salac Berry, it's Earthquake, Body Slam, Endure, and Swords Dance. So Clefable would, you know, redirect attacks from it while Groudon could set up, and then once it's set up, you know, it gains the speed boost, and then it's sweeping at either +2 or +4, whatever it's at, and it's doing significant amounts of damage. Funny thing is, in the finals, though, Groudon gets the speed boost, and we kind of mentioned this, like, no one really puts IVs on their Pokemon, you know, has the best IVs on their Pokemon, because that's probably not a thing people are aware of or super considerate about yet. The Groudon was still slower than the Mewtwo after the Salamberry boost.
Like, it was heartbreaking if you wanted to see a sweep, but I mean, obviously, me going with this, like, past mindset, I would be rooting for Calvin if I was watching it. And so I'm happy to see that. But he's just so unexpected. You see this Groudon go through all this effort to set up +4, 2 Swords Dances, a +1 speed boost, and then it just gets knocked out by a Mewtwo that's so faster.
That's actually Calvin's Mewtwo. I think it's just the way, you know, our stats work back then. It's just we didn't know how to do that yet in the game. And it was it's very hard and difficult there, so that's a whole different story. Anyway, you know, one of the biggest questions here is what did the Cradilly do? I don't understand. Like, we were talking about this before we started the show, but Cradilly at this time did not have Storm Drain as an ability. All it had was Suction Cups, and even like Storm Drain in the next generation, when it allows you to get the +1 special attack boost from a water move, I don't even think it gave you a resistance yet.
Immunity, you mean?
Immunity, yeah, sorry. Mm-hmm. An immunity. Because Gastrodon never gained or never was used in any capacity in VGC, really, probably because you didn't have that immunity to do that.
Yeah.
So we still can't figure out what the Cradilly does on Min's team.
Now, we've broken down a lot of parts of the match. And please do go watch it if you haven't seen it. Obviously, we've already spoiled several aspects of it, some of the bigger turns. But the conclusion of the match was rather heartbreaking. And I'll let Calvin relive that if he wants to. Which I'm sure you don't.
It was a very difficult time in my life. those few minutes on stage. Basically, what it came down to was... Mewtwo against my Kyogre.
Both at full health, I believe, or near it.
Full health. Yeah, full health. And
as simple as it can be, a one-on-one. Full health, yep.
And, you know,
the rain is up.
Kyogre in the rain, Hydro Pump, should knock out the Mewtwo in one hit. Well, it missed.
The first one did miss. And then
I try for it again. It missed again.
On the way, you also get Thunderbolt paralyzed.
That's right.
But it didn't end up mattering it because you needed to just hit one of these first two Hydro Pumps.
Right. And I was thinking from a probability standpoint, what are the chances that you do two Hydro Pumps and you miss both?
It's actually like... somewhere I did the math, but you like end up somewhere like at 70%, where you're like 72% chance that you get one, or something like that, and then you know the whatever remainder, the 28% chance that you're gonna miss both, or maybe it was smaller. I think because you needed the 0.15 times the 0.15. We're doing the math here. It was actually much lower, because I forgot you got to do the opposite math. So looking at it, Calvin pretty much had a 97% chance to win the match. If my math's wrong, let me know, but I'm pretty sure that's how it works. The chance to miss was a 15% chance.
Overall, the odds were in Calvin's favor, but they just didn't roll his way. They didn't roll your way. So
Pokemon was what happened, as we like to say in the business.
And everyone's familiar with all the luck elements in Pokemon, but... Calvin, we could see your distress on stage in the video, you know, after those happen, and you know you're a good sport about it, you know, still shaking everybody's hand and everything with after all that. But this, we haven't mentioned like what the prizes for nationals were. So these Hydro Pump misses do cost you, you know, pretty big deal. What did you miss out on because of this?
Well, the main prize was an all-expensed pay trip to Japan.
What? That's wild.
Yeah, and I mean, along with, you know, of course, the material prizes too. I believe at the time, the monetary value was for the entire package was about $11,000.
$11,000? Wow. Like, but because of including the paid trip and stuff. Gotcha. Now, this paid trip to Japan, was it anything to do with like Pokemon or Game Freak, or like was it just go hang out in Japan on your own merit? Or was there more to it? Or do you know or no?
Unfortunately, didn't.
You didn't earn it, so I guess you don't know, have all the details.
No.
I think... Oh, this is really weird. I think I do remember seeing a Minba post maybe a year later. Something about his trip there and how he got to visit Pokemon Park or some kind of like Pokemon theme park they had there. which was maybe part of the package deal and everything. But, you know, I'd seen something from Minba post somewhere. Someone else posted about it. And, you know, it's kind of weird because even when VGC first started and the Video Game Showdown 2008 started, we've never seen or heard from him again. So.
Gotcha. Now, it wasn't all sadness because, Calvin, you did still win some stuff from getting second place at Nationals. What did you walk away with, and what did you like get later down the line?
Yeah, you're showing us some pretty cool stuff already.
The second place trophy was definitely a highlight there. It was really big and really heavy.
Huge.
And, you know, quite a bit larger than the trophies that you see today.
It reminds me of, like, the regional bricks if they had, like, a Mega Evolution. Steven will, again, we're going to link this picture somewhere, as long as we have your permission, Calvin. So we'll show this picture. And this trophy is beautiful. It's actually, I think, the prettiest trophy I've seen. I love the Pikachu ones where they hold the trophy personally. And that's very Pokemon-esque and cool. This thing's crazy, incredible, awesome.
And there's also a base that if you put it, put this on the base, it lights up.
Wait, what?
Really?
What?
What?
Yeah, you can, because the trophy is entirely made of, I guess, crystal glass.
It's transparent.
Transparent. Yeah, yeah. So, you know, if you can put light through it and it looks really good.
All right. Now, wait, can you get us a picture or video of that? Because that I need to see in action. Do you still have the thing? The
base?
The base.
I'm going to have to search for it. I don't know if
okay.
I can find it.
All right. So that's a maybe. That's a maybe.
It's okay
we'll
if you don't have it, but no. That's just really cool to hear about that.
I mean, you can still picture it because we will be able to show you a picture of the trophy and see what it looks like because, wow, this trophy is beautiful. Very tall glass. And yeah, do check out our Twitter for those pictures that Steven's going to post.
Yep.
We'll get those all up there. Other than that, though, what else did you walk away with? Right here, we actually have Calvin didn't bring the trophy because we told him he didn't have to. It's so big. but what you did bring with you was this medal, right?
A second place medal that I was able to wear around my neck.
Yes, yes. Okay, so did they put it on you kind of like ceremonially? Like did they? I think I saw that in the video. I thought. Did they place this on you almost like what they do like at the Olympics where they like don't remember?
I probably don't remember exactly, but it would make sense that they did that as opposed to just handing it to me.
And again, we'll post a picture of this, but it says second place, and then on the left and right side of it is Rayquaza and Mewtwo, who you had on your team. They were kind of, I'm sure, a big part of JAA and that metagame, as well as just, they're the only two legendaries at this time that were like singular, special, individual ones, because
they weren't paired with anything.
They didn't have like an alternative. They were like, and also very powerful. They both go on to get Mega Evolutions. They're the only two legendaries to get Mega Evolutions, I believe.
Yep.
Besides if you count like Diancie, but you know what I mean. The the restricted legends, as we're normally referring to. Mewtwo being the only real, like, big, powerful legend from Gen 1. Gen 2 gives you Lugia and Ho-Oh, which don't have a kind of leader mon that they often have nowadays. I guess not often nowadays. Nowadays, they've kind of broken that trend, too, with, like, you know, Dawnwing's Necrozma.
Yeah,
oh, no, they have Necrozma.
Everything's in trios now.
They
Since Ruby Sapphire, everything's in a
they
trio.
They often do trios. And then that is what we see Rayquaza as, the leader of the trio of Gen 3. And so Mewtwo was the leader of the trio in Gen 1 over Charizard and Blastoise. I don't know.
I guess so, yeah.
And then one other, prize I would mention is a hand-drawn Pichu by Ken Shigemori.
Now this also Calvin brought with us, and it is beautiful. I know I used that word for the trophy, but like, Calvin showed us this, and I originally thought it was just a Pichu that, you know, it was the Ken Shigemori art of it, signed by himself, that I assumed that Calvin had gotten at the event or something. It turns out that it was mailed to you later, and this was hand-drawn by himself, Ken Shigemori himself.
Yes.
For you.
So if anyone doesn't know, I believe Ken Shigemori is one of the artists for a lot of trading cards.
I think he still is.
He still is, yeah. So
and it, like, has been, like, forever.
That's a really big deal, then.
Yeah. So, like, really, really cool. And you have it framed. Did it come in a frame or anything?
It did not come in a frame. I put the frame in myself.
Yeah, of course. I mean, you got to frame that. It's awesome. So, was this, where do you have it displayed? Where do you have all of these, like, things displayed? Anything? What's out and what's hidden away?
Well, I mean, the trophy is displayed, but I don't have, like, a trophy case or display case or anything like that. Yeah. It's just on top of a bureau. The drawing...
Is it hung up or is it
it's out but it's not hung up.
Okay.
Because I just didn't have the right spot for it at the time.
Gotcha.
But it is something I look at every now and then just because it's so cool.
Yes. That's really just awesome. Something a really cool memorabilia for your finish in the New York National.
Yeah, for Journey Across America too. So yeah. You know, this after Nationals, you know, that's it. The Journey Across America...
That's the conclusion of the season.
Mall tournament is over. And, you know, it's a kind of an odd story, but we don't get, you know, real competitive Pokemon again until 2008.
So an off year, I guess.
We did have an off year. And we'll talk about that in detail on our next, you know, Roar of Time episode as we progress through time here. But, Calvin... You know, something that I had done after that battle in Seattle thing in 2005 is, like, I really love the experience getting to be with other trainers who are this, you know, involved in Pokemon as this kind of hobby on the competitive side. And I was like, wow, I really enjoy this experience, and I kept looking for more tournaments. And likewise, I still did the same thing after Journey Across America. Okay, well, what's next? What's the next tournament going to be? You know, what were you thinking after this tournament happened? After it was over,
I wasn't thinking a whole lot. in terms of, like, you know, what my competitive Pokemon career is going to look like or anything like that. I was just happy to place how I did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I definitely enjoy playing Pokemon. I'm glad I'm still doing it to this day.
And so, yeah, you did you end up playing at all in the 2008 Video Game Showdown, or when did you basically pick the game back up?
I want to say it was back when Terrakion and Moongus was a thing.
So 2011, maybe?
That sounds about right.
Okay, so you took a long break then.
I did.
After the JAA. Okay, okay. So then you came back, and then have you been playing since then?
Mostly.
On and off?
On and off. I would say mostly at the local level. I don't travel to a lot of regionals or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Maybe only the ones that are within relatively close driving distance.
Yes, yes, exactly. And obviously you've qualified for Worlds. You were with us on our Worlds episode 4 2016. And you're still playing. You're still playing this season and still currently playing. I think all of us are current players. None of us are, like, retired.
Yeah, fully retired. So
partially retired. Uh-huh.
But I'll definitely say that the community of players is a huge factor in why I'm still playing to this day. I mean, aside from the game itself, which I really enjoy, just being able to hang out with people,
mm-hmm.
you know, playing a game that I really enjoy.
Now, before we sign off, is there anything more that you wanted to add about JAA or just your career in general or anything else that you wanted to mention?
Well, I guess, I mean, thinking back, I've been playing Pokemon for all this time. I would like to keep playing Pokemon for as long as these games are still being made.
Yeah, still being supported. You know, BGC is on the downslope, but let's hope with Sword and Shield.
And, I think they're doing fine.
And it's
Pokemon
good,
in general.
It's good that there is no age limit in you know, like a maximum age limit in Pokemon that you can literally, you know.
That's what I love about it is that the Masters Division covers a very wide age range, obviously going from, I think, like 16 or 17 or something, like 16 and
somewhere around there.
15. And there's just so many different players of all different ages. I've made friends with players who are much my senior players that are younger than me. I've gotten to work with, you know, juniors and seniors and helping them improve their game, as well as learning from the players that are more veteran than me. And it's just really cool because... Pokemon, with that rule, they don't have any kind of age limit or age range. They have the lower divisions, but afterwards, it's just, you know, whoever wants to play, you know, they don't bar anybody from competing, and it's just really, it's just an awesome community that Pokemon has built.
Yeah. There were two more things I wanted to bring up here. So the first one is, so Kelvin, you'd mentioned you came back, you know, around VGC 2011, but were you aware of the other tournaments that were going on in the three previous years, 2008, 9, and 10?
Not particularly, no.
Okay, So it wasn't like you were extensively, actively searching for other tournaments, kind of like I was back then, because I played in those 2 years, and then 2008, that's a whole different story. We'll get to talk about this soon, but the other thing I wanted to mention, how like this, the doubles metagame, so the double battles thing here, Journey Across America is really kind of like a predecessor to VGC and modern, our modern day, system, how things work. But, looking back on it now and just seeing what our whole circuit's been for the last, for VGC would be what, 11, 12 years now? Mm-hmm. We can all answer this question. What do you think they took from that tournament to incorporate into the modern day? I don't think there is much, but, what did they look at? What did they see to, try and make this a thing that could last? Because after 2006, we did have a whole full year off of nothing. And, I was worried at the point. It's like, oh, I guess there aren't any more tournaments anymore. So,
well, you got to wait till the next anniversary. That was the 10th year anniversary, 2007. Yeah, like, that's the
11th
anniversary.
Oh, we got to wait till 2011 again for year 15.
Yeah.
And then 2016, They did a big thing for Pokemon 20. Pokemon 25 is coming up soon in 2021, so.
Well, Steven, I gotta say, your question is very difficult. But one thing that I will mention is I think that they just realized that with the number of people, they obviously, I think maybe they just underestimated the scope of how many people would want to play. They limited it a lot, and they did continue to limit it in the future years. But I think they just really underestimated how many people would be interested in playing Pokemon in a live setting and how much attention it drew. I think that's the thing that was the main takeaway, is that so many people came to these tournaments, so many people wanted to play and be a part of it, and that they knew it was something they had to continue going, because I'm sure as they traveled across America, their journey, they saw Pokemon fans everywhere that wanted to be a part of this. And I think that's like the main takeaway that I'm getting.
So Kelvin, what would be, if there are one like thing you could change about your team or your play during those two tournaments, is there anything you'd want to? What would be that change?
If I could time travel and do this all over again, I think I would not have used Hydro Pump.
In the kind of those last two turns of finals, what would you have done instead?
I would have used whatever electric move I had on at the time.
Like Thunder or something?
Thunder, two hit KO. The Mewtwo.
Maybe. Yeah. Okay.
Thinking of that, now that would make a lot more sense. Because once I've missed the first Hydro Pump, I had to go for the second one because I couldn't, right. I had to knock it out in one turn at that point. But if I were to play it safer, I could have gone for the electric move, hit Mewtwo twice, and I would have won.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Cool. I really like that answer. Kind of going back to what more ideal win condition could have been for you. But I'm just curious, or I wonder, like, if Journey Across America were like a format we played now and had that metagame development from February to August, what kind of changes we would see. And you can probably see from tournament to tournament, we probably did notice some of these changes throughout all the teams and stuff. But I'm just very curious what it would have been like today. Like we mentioned, with all the resources available now. And, we're going to see another big uptick for tournaments and attendance in 2020 with Sword and Shield. I think that's going to be a really big change, more significant than we're actually anticipating. So we'll see what happens there. But I think this concludes our roar of time here for 2006 here for Journey Across America. That was a fun time to be playing competitive Pokemon back then. It's still fun today. Kelvin and I are still around. And it's really cool to still see a lot of the people who are back then still playing today. So there are a lot of couple names still notable from that national tournament, like Chucky Hornstein. There's some others in there. I know there's like Nick Harper from Florida, I believe, who I've seen in standings in some of the regionals, like modern regionals we've had today. I've seen him around. I've seen some of the other names around as well in the past. People like Judd Price, Stephen Shotwell, they used to play VGC. They used to be really good players as well. And, you know, not too many familiar names anymore, but it's cool to still see some people around playing competitive Pokemon.
For this long, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's really neat.
And of course,
your
mom.
Yeah, and my mom too. Yeah, right. So I think that'll do it for our show here. But we just wanted to give a big thank you to Kelvin for being on with us today. We really appreciate your time. This was a longer episode. So we know time is a very valuable thing. So it means a lot to us. Thank you so much for being with us today.
And thank you for having me here.
Yeah, it was very fun.
So everyone, you can find our show in a variety of different places. Send us your comments, questions, and feedback to our email, vgchypervoice@gmail.com. Let us know what you thought about this Roar of Time episode. We're planning on going through up to modern day with every VGC season coming up.
So if there's anything you want differently, if there's like a different way you want us to approach it, or you know, just feedback in general, how you would like to see us do it, like or hear us, I guess, you know. Let us know what worked, what didn't, and any other suggestions.
Yeah, send it to the email. You can tweet at us. You can tweet at our at the show's Twitter as well. You can also find the show on Podbean, iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. You can leave us a review in on iTunes to help us with the visibility with our show. Tell your friends about the Hyper Voice if you think there's a show they might enjoy about competitive Pokemon. And you can also find the show on Facebook and Twitter. And on Twitter, you can find their show at the Hyper Voice. Lastly, you can find all of us on social media. You can find follow me on Twitter at Super Morioka. Alex, where can people find you?
You can follow me at LexiconVGC.
And Kelvin does not have a Twitter account, but you can find him on Facebook if you do want to reach out to him and you know, talk to him about some of the Journey Across America things or anything else in general. But if it's only through Twitter, you can, you know, reach Alex or myself and we can relay some information to Kelvin if you need that. But yeah, if Kelvin, people want to reach you, they can find you on Facebook.
Yes, please. Go ahead.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah, we all love talking about Pokemon here, but that is a wrap for our first expedition into some competitive Pokemon history. We're going to keep going through time here. It's going to be intermittent through a lot of other episodes, but everyone, thank you all so much for listening to our show. We hope you enjoyed it, and stay tuned for more of the Hyper Voice.
Aloha! Aloha.